2. Going aboard. It was a quarter to midday. Matthew Lovelace and his wife and children were once again back upon the waterfront, but this time they were not the only pilgrims. There were many other families dressed just as they, men with wide-brimmed, tall black hats and their wives in white. The pilgrims were gathering to go aboard the Speedwell and the Mayflower. A strident voice rang out, "Prepare to embark! Prepare to embark!" With that, the pilgrims moved slowly forward and gathered at the head of the steps that led down to the rowing boats below. At a signal from one of the pilgrims, the men took off their hats and bowed their heads. The children stopped their wild excitement, and a deadly hush came over all the waterfront. Everything fell still and silent, apart from the occasional bark of a stray dog. The lapping of the water could be distinctly heard. The silence could be felt. Suddenly a man's voice broke the spell. One of the pilgrims began to speak. He began to pray in a deep and solemn voice. As he proceeded, his voice grew louder. He could be heard all over the waterfront. He asked that God would have his hand upon them and bless them in their coming journey, that he would prosper them, protect them, and land them safe in America. All the pilgrims were united in their prayers. Subdued, throaty amen murmurs could be heard as the man proceeded. As the pilgrim came to the end of his prayer, he offered up thanks to God for his blessing upon their lives up to then. Then he sounded his final amen. The whole company of the pilgrims added their voices to his, and a great swelling amen sounded across the water and reached far out even to the ships in the bay. The men then donned their hats. Tears were in many eyes. Silence reigned once more. The company shuffled steadily forward to the head of the steps. The pilgrims began to descend in orderly company into the rowing boats, men, women, and children. The pilgrims were leaving. The rowing boats were quickly filled with their excited human cargo. But the excitement was subdued. The heavy felt silence still dominated the whole scene. Some orders rang out. A boat was filled, and the sailors pulled with the oars. Soon the bay was dotted with little bobbing boats making their way towards the two sea-going vessels. Within a matter of minutes, the Lovelaces came alongside. The sailors held the frisking boat tight against the vessel which towered above them. Matthew, Martha, and their two children began to climb aboard the Speedwell, clambering and pulling hand over fist at the twisting rope lather as it dangled over its edge. They breasted the side of the ship. A forest of hands heaved them over. In no time at all, the four of them were standing, albeit somewhat shaken and dishevelled, upon the deck of the tiny ship. They straightened themselves, smoothed their ruffled clothes. Mrs. Lovelace fussed hen-like about her chicks. "So, this is the Speedwell," said Mr. Lovelace, looking about him. He slowly shook his head. He tried to impart a cheery note to his words. Indeed it was. This was the cockleshell they hoped would land them safely in Virginia. "Father," said Justice, looking up to him, his eyes and voice betraying his eagerness, "may I in prudence go and explore the ship?" "Yes. Yes, you may, my son," replied his father with a smile. "But you must be careful. Don't get into any mischief. Leave things alone that do not belong to you." "Yes, father, I promise. Come on," called Justice to his sister Prudence, tugging feverishly at her dress and already moving away. "Come on, let's go and see what we can find." The deck upon which they stood was very tiny. All around were coils of rope, spars, and rolled-up sails, and boxes of most interesting and inviting nature. I'll say that again. The deck upon which they stood was very tiny. All around were coils of rope, spars, and rolled-up sails, and boxes of a most interesting and inviting nature. The children looked about them, drinking in their new world, eyes and mouths wide open. Sailors brushed by them, speaking their seemingly foreign tongue. They were a motley crew. They wore such a variety of garb, shirts of every hue, faded jackets, and hats of every description, and some that defied all description. Ragged trousers, rudely torn off at the knee, patches and stripes in profusion. The children thought that every colour that ever was must be featured in the sailors' clothes. At one end of the deck there was an inviting black hole with steps steeply descending below. The steps quickly disappeared in a way that aroused much curiosity. "Come on," said Justice. "Let's go down below and see what we can find. Where do these steps lead, I wonder?" They scrambled down the narrow, well-worn steps and immediately were lost in complete blackness. It hit them like a wall. It stopped them in their tracks. It almost took their breath away. No, 'twas not complete blackness. Pale pools of dirty yellow light were cast here and there by spluttering tallow candles, held in tarnished brass lanterns around the sides of the vessel. For a moment or two the children could see nothing, but then their eyes gradually grew accustomed to the dim, sallow light that was shed upon the scene by the bleary flares. They could begin to make out vague shadows and strange shapes cast by the weak, flickering lights. They saw the place was crowded with pilgrim families just like their own, who were trying to make space for themselves in the corners, nooks, and crannies of this tiny vessel. Some were spreading blankets upon the floor and placing bundles for stopgap pillows for weary heads. Boxes grated across the harsh wooden floor as they resisted the efforts to arrange them as makeshift rough furniture. So, this was to be their home for the next 2 or 3 months. This would take them across the ocean to America. "Where's the beds?" queried Prudence. "Will we have no bed to sleep upon?" said she to her brother. Justice took a manly stance in air. With legs apart and hands upon his hips, he made his reply, "No, of course not, silly. We have so little space. We shall be crammed together all the way across the ocean. We shall have to lie upon the floor, I expect." They turned their eyes from the scene. They preferred to forget the hard wooden bed to come, and the cramped space. "Let's go down to the next deck." Justice had had his curiosity aroused, and it demanded further satisfaction. "Yes, let's," agreed his sister, she being no sluggard to find further wonders. They gingerly picked their way across the deck, past the boxes, round the people, who hardly noticed them, so engrossed were they in setting up their new homes. The children carefully groped their way down the dark, unguarded steps to the black hole below. The same scene as before was repeated before their eyes. The place was alive with pilgrim families who were staking out their possession of the precious tiny deck space. The gloom was full of strange shadows, dancing wildly in the faltering light, flickering and jumping on the wall. Boxes stood all around. The children yielded to their itching fingers. In no time, they were lifting lids of inviting boxes, peering and poking into crevices, their eyes and mouths growing wider and wider with wonder. As they stood there drinking it all in, a sailor pushed his way roughly past them. "Make their way there, you young'uns, and keep out of my way, will ye?" "Please, sir, what's down below?" said Justice, tucking at the man's shirt before he disappeared into the gloom.
"Down below, laddie. Way is the stores down there. All the voo we're going to eat,
All the tools we're going to need. All the water we'll ring. That's what's down there. And is no place for the likes of you. We don't want any children down there, so you stay above the stores. Do you hear me? He grabbed the children and roughly pulled them towards him. He bared his teeth. They shone white. Well, nearly white in the murky light. You never know what might happen to little uns down there. He put his head back and guffawed. The laugh seemed to pierce the children's ears and reach right to the pit of their stomachs. He pushed his face into theirs. He was not laughing now. You stay on this deck and above. Go on now, off with you. Do you hear me? You stay above the stores. With that, he released his grip, pushed the children away, and was gone. The children shook with fear. "That's fine, mother and father again," said Prudence to her brother, her mouth dry. "Let's see what space we've got to live in." "Yeah, let's. That's a good idea," said Justice in reply. He swallowed deeply. He was relieved to hear Prudence change the subject. He hoped she had not heard the fear in his trembling, dry voice, nor felt it in his shaking hand. They climbed the steps, manoeuvred their way across the hold, and up the steps again, and so out onto the open deck. They had to shut their eyes against the blazing of the sun as they came out from the dimness below. They had not realized how bright was the day above, nor how dark the night below. However, their eyes quickly grew accustomed to the glare, and soon they noticed their mother standing across the deck, anxiously looking for them. "Here we are, mother," they cried out. "And there you are," she replied with obvious relief. "Where have you been?" She did not wait for an answer. "Come on, you two, and see the place we've found to live." They reached out their hands to grip their mother's outstretched welcome. Together they made their way to another hatchway, descended again into the hold below, and soon were united with their father. Their few boxes had been placed about to try to give them a measure of privacy. They tried to make themselves as snug as uninviting boards would allow. In next to no time they were seated upon the floor with their backs pressed against the wooden sides of the vessel. Their father spoke to them, wagging his finger at them to give added emphasis. "Now, my children, this is all the space we shall have for the next few weeks." He tapped the few boxes around them. "You must mark carefully where we live. You must not get lost. You must keep your few possessions in careful order, and you must not stray into the space of others. Remember, we shall live and sleep here for many weeks. This is our home until we reach America." Mrs. Lovelace added her counsel. "You can see how cramped the hold is," she said. "There is very little light. Even with the hatches open, you can hardly see a hand in front of your face. But what is more worrying is that there is so little air. We must spend as much time as we can on the open deck. That is what we must do. When the storms come, we shall be compelled to stay below, maybe for days at a time. So get above whenever you can." This ominous prediction of stifling days below filled the children with much fear. They looked about them. It was hard to see things clearly in the near pitch blackness below. But they made out others just like themselves, families huddled together. They heard the whimpering of bewildered children. Others were separated from their parents and frantically calling out. Some people had the wrong boxes. One chest had been dropped and all its precious contents spilled across the floor. All seemed chaos and confusion. The blackness could almost be felt. The rancid smell of tallow dips filled the air. "Are you afraid?" said Prudence, lifting her head quietly to her father. He looked down, a gentle smile upon his lips. "No, my child, no, my child," came the solemn but reassuring reply. "God will be with us. God will keep us.